the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Graham Hunter, good morning to you. How you doing?
Hi, Jeff. Doing well. Enjoying listening to Big John there.
Good segue for us, for you, because he's your 98th guest on the big interview.
It's kind of you to mention that, and I do admit I shared that just before the show, because the interview with John isn't out yet, Jer. 98 guests feels like an achievement. And for example, although Joe's interview was very good there, did he searingly push in a Pulitzer way to find out that Big John is afraid of the dark? Because that's what comes out of the big interview, Jeff. So anyway, listen, it was good to hear him talking about that side that, you know, was playing from when I just moved permanently to Barcelona. Throughout the years, many times I worked on the pitch at Parkhead as TV summarisers for a game where Barcelona beat Celtic, with Big John standing by my side and helping me through the atmosphere of a full Parkhead. And I remember watching Martin O'Neill's side knocking Frank Rijkaard's Celtic out of the UEFA Cup with a 1-0 win, I think Alan Thompson at Parkhead, and then a 0-0 draw at Camp Nou, which was utterly an astonishing match. So they've been regular visitors to Spain while I've been living here, and John was a clever footballer as far as I was concerned.
Oh, 100%. I did want to talk to you about somebody else who passed away this week. It's Michael Robinson, a lesser figure of that Liverpool team, and even to a certain extent the Ireland team, despite the fact he was unbelievably talented, but like a titanic figure in Spanish broadcasting, who I know, again, was helpful to you when you moved over there as somebody else who was a non-native speaker.
I think he would have been helpful to me, you know, had I been a young Spaniard. Alison, there's only 6 years difference between the two of us. But Michael was one of these guys who was gifted with an awful lot when he was made, because as you said, like his football career, starting from the time when Bobby Charlton knocks at his back door to say, son, go and get your dad. You know, I want him to give me permission to sign you for Preston North End, all the way through to setting up the winner to take, you know, Brighton through to a cup, FA Cup final. And then, as you say, winning the League Cup, and winning the Champions League, European Cup as it was then in Rome, forgetting the trophy and the duty-free and being sent back from the plane by Graeme Souness, all the way to really being important in an Osasuna side that beat Barcelona, beat Real Madrid, won at the Cathedral San Mames with Robinson in that Osasuna side, even though he couldn't find Osasuna on a map when he first moved there. All these things, and the movie star good looks, what they led to was a guy who went, well, my life's not even half finished now that I stopped playing football. And he became a charismatic, an extremely good first wave football analyzer. Now, I know, because I was born in the 60s, that in the very early 70s, we were beginning to get ex-footballers offering opinions on panels mid-football games. And occasionally, you'd begin to get in the 80s some co-commentary summarizers. But I still think that when Robinson began on Canal Plus here in 91, to not just offer little opinions in the studio in El Día Después, but to properly analyse and break football down and become a co-commentator who added value, which is still a flaw that many ex-footballers, ex-coaches have when they're on co-coms on a live match. They don't add value. They repeat what's just been said or what you've just seen. Not Michael. Michael's talent soared. And yes, even when he was extremely high profile at Canal Plus, for example, he was helping advise Florentino Perez that Steve McManaman would be a good signing from Liverpool. And courtesy of him, one of his team tipped me the whole story. Back when Steve moved from Liverpool to Real Madrid, I had a back page exclusive about the story all on its own. And Steve McManaman, this first time we met in Madrid, was like, how the hell? He didn't use the word hell. How the F did you get that story? Nobody knew. And Michael had said, give him the go-ahead for me to have that story. And what's more, once I moved to Spain, as you pointed out, when you met him, either over goldfish bowl-sized gin and tonics, because he liked the night, Michael, which is one of the reasons I so liked him, but also when you met him on the road, because doing football match commentary for La Liga, we would meet him and Carlos Martinez, his co-com for Canal Plus. We'd meet him on trains or planes or hotels or post-match, sometimes for dinners or drinks. And he rose to become a very clever TV content maker in that he had superb people around him, and he never failed to give credit to his research team. But he was an ideas man as well as a tremendous football analyst and a very persuasive, hypnotic sometimes, TV presence. He had the magnetism that the camera liked him, his voice, his delivery, his articulacy, the fact that he was extremely fluent in Spain. I mean, almost from the get-go, he properly put himself to learning. And do you know, I'll summarize by saying that not only were the front pages of the papers full of testimony to his greatness when he passed too early the other day, there were many Spaniards who I know who have nothing to do with this industry who texted me about losing the voice of their childhood, that losing the man who guided them through from infancy to grown up life, watching the football that they loved. And we all know that sensation of losing a voice that has been with you throughout your life, a voice that you cherish. But those who knew him queued up to give testimony to the fact that really, I think you can use the word that this was a man of greatness, a man of huge spirit, charisma, good looks, talent. I don't know anybody who didn't enjoy his company. And it feels like a cruel loss. And Spain was really, really afflicted. And it said something about Spain that this was a Leicester-born Irishman who wasn't treated as our pet foreigner. By Spain, he was treated as one of us. And that's not bad, Ger.
No, it's pretty amazing. I actually didn't realise how high the broadcasting career had gone. So it was the main football analyst for a long period of time, and that was him.
He kicked off in El Día Después the day after in 1991, and it was just a two-person gig at that stage. And behind them, they'd replicated a football terracing, old-style terracing. And the first thing Michael did is the presenter welcomed him on board. We've got a great revelation. We've got Michael Robinson on. And he went, oh, I'm glad you've tidied up that set behind us, because it was covered with litter last season. And I really didn't like it. And there should be fans there. And the presenter was like, well, Michael, you know, you don't see the litter after football matches because you're inside doing, getting showered and press conference and changes. And he's, well, I don't care. If we're having this set, I want fans on it. And from day one, where he started with that humour and that linguistic fluency, what I genuinely believe, the comparison I make is that when Luca Viale was sacked in 1999 and I got an interview with him in his house in Eaton Square in London, I remember him saying, I said, what next, Luca? Well, I'm off to Italy. I want to do for Italy what Andy Gray has done for the UK on Sky, because in Italy, everything's negative. They criticise the defences, the referees, but they don't open football up and talk about what was well structured, what were good ideas, tactical changes within a match. And I want Italy to open itself up. I want to copy Andy Gay. Well, Michael Robinson was doing that from 91, in that he wasn't simply there for decoration. He wasn't simply there to say, yes, you're right, that was a good goal. His tone immediately was, did you see this? Or my opinion is, or when I was a player, one of the things they could have done, I know that player, I know that coach, because he was still very current on the scene. And from that day until his last match, which, you know, ironically was at Anfield when Atleti went through in the Champions League. From that day to this, his tone was that of, I can paint pictures for you, not only because I'm beautiful. He's a poet. He used words so well, but he understood football and was able to explain it in such a way that was neither highfalutin, nor was it monosodium glutamate. It was telling viewers things that they hadn't seen and bettering the majority of football pros that I've seen on television. But behind the scenes, he was coming up with a program called Informe Robinson, where his interviewing technique, Ger, and all of us trying to do this art know how difficult it is to engage with your guests, to make them relax and bring out things that the audience hasn't heard before, and to be themselves. So that's not an interview necessarily, but a conversation. Michael had that art, to the extent that when he had Informe Robinson as a documentary on Cesc Fabregas and Gerard Piqué, the glimmer twins of Spanish football, when they were a little bit younger than they are now, I'd say probably they were both about 24, 25, he got the two of them together because they'd been boyhood chums. And at this stage, Cesc was at Arsenal and Piqué was, you know, breaking through well at Barcelona. And he got them to admit, much to Cesc's horror, that when they were tearaway kids, they'd nicked down to the beachfront here in Barcelona and gone around pinching petrol caps off cars just as a little hobby. And Piquet told this story in full flow with Cesc gradually, I'll just do looking at him like this, or going, Jenny, what are you doing? And Robin's like, it's okay, the world will understand. And he cast a magic web of a really rich brandy voice and a knowledge of his subjects, but also people skills that made Informe Robinson Informs, this documentary series, principally about football to begin with, unmissable and elite. And then he expanded into other areas of society, other areas of sport. And he made some of the best sports documentary products in terms of TV hour long or 55 minute long sports documentary content this country has ever seen. And that's why I reach for greatness, because he was so multi-layered and with it, unassuming, kind, interesting, funny, had a house in Biarritz, chose to live in Marbella for his last months, loved his golf. Heaven help you if you interrupt a day of golf with Michael Robinson. And I will miss him greatly. And you're right to talk about this Irish international, because when the when the news came out that he died, Spain really grieved, really grieved. He was an adopted son.
Yeah. Sounds like he's going to be quite a loss in Spanish broadcasting. Brian, when we've spoken about football over the last couple of weeks, we've kind of struggled to find the importance in it or to kind of find the energy to talk about real on-pitch matters. But there is a couple of real football stories developing over the last couple of weeks. One of them is the very real possibility of the Saudi Arabian takeover at Newcastle United. The back page is here this morning plastered with Mauricio Pochettino being linked to Newcastle United. It's going to be quite a payday for him if he gets the job. What's your take on all of this in terms of a career move for Pochettino? I think from Newcastle's perspective, it'll obviously be a very, very good appointment.
Whoa. Oh, and I really like the fact that this was nothing about the note that I got beforehand and that you've gone to the crucial issue. I have to tread carefully here. I've been speaking recently to people who are at the club. I've been somebody who's peripheral to the takeover, not central, but nonetheless peripheral, has asked me my opinion on certain things that might happen in the structure at Newcastle once the takeover is complete. I know that there is still, irrespective of, how would I say this, of how close the papers are and the exchange of papers and the financial niceties, there still remains on Ashley's part, a man I don't know, but I know people around him, a scepticism, particularly about Amanda Staveley. I'm not quite sure why, but that does remain even now. Directly to answer your question, I think that there is a taste amongst those who are attempting to buy Newcastle to fly a kite about Rafa Benitez returning. Pochettino's quality and untapped potential for me, to answer your question straight, that's I view things, I've been taught by people I respect in football over my life, that the easier thing to do, particularly in spotting a player, but I think it applies directly to this situation, the easiest thing to do is to spot maybe what they don't have or don't do well, because that's very simple, and we all reach for kind of insurance nets so that if something happens, you're part of the process of it happening, you can always say, well, I always said he wasn't very good at this. But the real people who jump ahead, I think, in sport, particularly in signing somebody in some manner or another, doesn't have to be a player, is saying, what more is there to come? Or what are the things that this person does that not everybody can? And in Pochettino's case, I'm applying that to this, I think, pretty false stigma about not having won anything. You know, he's coached at Espanyol, Southampton, and took Spurs to, you know, within touching distance of winning the Champions League. So just like when there was this false thing about Klopp losing finals and then he starts winning them, Pochettino isn't simply a guy who's proven his ability to coach, a guy who's proven his ability to integrate with the character of football in England, nor is he simply a guy with fantastic contacts who could help a club, any club, sign brilliantly from out with the gene pool in Britain. And I think that is true of him. Pochettino could do that. In my opinion, he's still young and vibrant and bursting to win things. And were I an ambitious club, I would look on it as a positive that you're signing somebody intensely hungry to have the means to consistently win trophies. Mm. I can't, but I don't know what you've said, you guys, on your show, which is cutting edge. I can't say that if I were Pochettino, I would sign for that ownership. I can't say that. In fact, I wouldn't. But football tells you that it's a sport of expediencies, and people sometimes put personal and social concerns aside. So what Pochettino wants to do vis-a-vis this hypothetical opening at Newcastle, I haven't spoken to him about, so I can't say. What I can say is that after Spurs sacked him, Arsenal sent Raul Sanlehi over to Buenos Aires to tempt him before they signed Arteta. For whatever reasons, that didn't work out. And it's my strong opinion that Pochettino believed prior to the Newcastle takeover that either Manchester United or Manchester City would come his way in due course. And I'd imagine that he has the financial stability to wait out and see what Pep Guardiola's attitude will be at the end of his one remaining year, which is next season. And therefore, I don't know if he would take this Newcastle job if offered on, is my honest opinion. You don't need me, none of you need me to say that it would be an extremely good fit for that club, for those hypothetical resources. But in my opinion, his attitude about wanting to be next in at Manchester City is something that would give him cause to stop and think very hard.
Graham, I did want to ask you about Fabio Capello, who said that, that he believes Real Madrid are the one club who are going to largely be unaffected by what happens here. I'm paraphrasing, and I might be doing it badly, but essentially he's saying Real Madrid are going to come out of this crisis well. Everybody else is a bit screwed in Spain. That's an oversimplification on my part. Is it an oversimplification on his part?
There's a lot of worth in what he says. First of all, Real Madrid have, in relative terms, spent pretty sparingly over the net of the last 3-4 years. Secondly, Real Madrid have an extraordinarily large and talented squad where they can, if needs be, barter players or sell in whatever conditions we find the market once life begins to resemble normal again, or as close as we're going to get for many months. So if you look at their financial resources, their lines of credit, the assets that they've got to use currently, which are more that actually than an elite coach would want. It's hard to manage a squad of that size. So they can either trade for what they need, or they do have the resources to buy, or they can sell to get what they need. And I think that Capello is alluding also to their credit lines, in that it will be far harder for certain financial institutions in Spain to see Real Madrid struggling than it would Athletic or Betis or Villarreal. So I don't think they'll be immune to it. But if you want to then make the comparison and net how do the other clubs come out of it, I think he's right. I think that the need to service debt at Atleti, the need to service debt at Barcelona, the needs of Barcelona's squad, in terms of the other clubs, there is a what would you call it, an arc of financial resources whereby you'll find that Eibar have been badly affected by this, but their outgoings are not as much. They can manage their purse strings more tightly. They're used to existing on free transfers or low expenditure. And therefore, broadly, they will, pound for pound, be suffering less than Barcelona or Atleti. So Capello has, there's worth in what he says. And I think that if we extricate ourselves from the fact that all of us have been in the middle of a crisis and Spain has been crippled by it, it's not the first time on this show recently that we've talked about the fact that Real Madrid have invested in youth, have begun to invest, in my personal view, more wisely, less extravagantly, and with more more cohesive and clear strategy than was the case in the Galactico era and the post-Galactico era. And therefore, if they are well equipped for what comes next, then you take your hat off to them.
Graham, stay well. Thanks a million for joining us.
You too, guys. Thank you.
So Graham Hunter giving us some thoughts on a range of different topics. We went a bit long there, but obviously I hadn't, realised that Michael Robinson had been so influential a figure for Graham at various stages in his career as well. So it was good to get that insight.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.